Good morning, church.
Good morning.
I am delighted to be here with you this morning. What I need to say to you to begin is to give you some sense of how I got to be here. I am purposeful, but purposeful only in this regard. When I receive a call from my sister, I know that I need to jump.
We all know that feeling.
Yes. When my sister is followed by her pastor, I know that there is a sense of urgency that I need to bring upon myself. In that way, when I'm given a task and I'm called upon by my sister and her pastor, I become single-focused. I become like that young boy in The Sixth Sense. You know him? I see my task everywhere. And because of my professional calling, because I deal with primarily black folk, I tend to see black folk everywhere, in everything. So that's one way of understanding how I got to be here, that is, in this pulpit. But there's another way of understanding that. There is another short to the long story. I grew up in Cleveland. I grew up running these streets. I grew up in places like this. I grew up primarily in Glenville. The ladies who are sitting in the front row, my two sisters, my niece to some degree, those are my muses along with my mother. My mother and my father were my heroes. Down the road a bit, if you took Cedar Avenue straight down, you could come to the church that was my home church, Antioch Baptist Church. I need to emphasize Baptist, all right? I want you all to understand where I came by, whatever I came by, it's in a Baptist church. In that Baptist church was, in fact, the preacher par excellence. Someone who I'll never attempt to imitate. I wouldn't even attempt to imitate John here. The point is that Wade Hampton McKinney had a mark on me. Even the name, Wade Hampton McKinney. He had to be a preacher, right? Reverend McKinney made me believe for a moment that I wanted to be a preacher, but I quickly disabused myself of that notion. I don't have that kind of mettle. I did know, though, that I wanted to teach. But understanding that I wouldn't preach, I do have to let you understand that I have some familiarity with pulpits. I've probably been in too many of them with too great a frequency over another lifetime. I grew up in a family of historians, not professional historians, not people who pretend to do what I do, but people who understood history and were observant of the human condition because of that history. My mother, a family historian. My sister practices that craft to this day. What does that have to do with this lesson today, though? Well, everything. Everything. It both shapes the lesson and it gives it its substance. Think of the shaping of a lesson in this way. Think of context. Why am I here? Well, my wife, another professor, a creative writer, a person of biting wit, puts it this way. You're there, Magan, because it's Black Employment Month. A generalized, sardonic, ironic context. But a more specific context would put me here because it's the one that shapes this message. It is that the church in which I was raised, the Black church, gives both form, context, and substance to the message that I want to talk about today. It doesn't imply that there is only a single message. But it does mean that we share a tradition of many messages, of many interpretations. Some of you may not know this, but the interpretation of the traditional Black church, the church pre-Martin Luther King, is a church that is full of oxymorons, of contradictions, but they work. It's a church in which we might talk about an Old Testament Christianity. Now, can you wrap your minds around that? An Old Testament Christianity. It functions in this way. The first part of this contradiction is a contradiction that talks about freedom. Freedom. The Old Testament is full of freedom. It talks about it. It has books dedicated to it. Exodus becomes the mainstay of this particular treatment. Freedom. And so if you were in a black church antebellum, postbellum, modern, postmodern, the message that you talk about in that church is a message of freedom. The other part of what you talk about, though, that is sometimes lost for us who are wedded to the New Testament, is the question of justice. The word we liked when I was coming up was retribution. Retribution. Retribution wasn't necessarily in our hands. In fact, it was never in our hands. It was in the hands of the God that guided us, who led us along the path of freedom, who told us when we should steal away, who pointed to the directions and the codes in the spirituals. That was where retribution and justice would come from. Hence the readings. Luke, Isaiah. The readings talk to us about freedom. They talk to us about justice and retribution. But what they talk to us about, basically, for the purpose of what I want to say, are the questions regarding the difficulties and the dangers of being prophetic. Of being prophetic. What does it mean to prophesy? The act of doing prophecy. What does it mean to be a prophetic people? Those are questions that are fraught with difficulty and dangers. If we began at the end of this particular lesson, we went to the New Testament and we looked at Luke 4:24. Then Christ tells us about the danger and the difficulty in being prophetic. Not something that was read in the scripture this morning, but something that needs to be added on. Christ says this in this interpretation. But I tell you the truth. I tell you the truth. No prophet is accepted in his own hometown. What is Christ speaking to? Well, in one way, Christ is telling us about alienation. In another way, he is speaking to the question of exile, being exiled and exiling. Think about where we are. Think about the history of this particular space. Think about the context of the world in which we now live. If we thought of Christ as a historian, if we thought that his reference to Isaiah was in fact a historical text lodged in scriptural meaning, then we would think about our own history and we would recognize ourselves as being a land of exiles. But then we would come to the contradictions that are wedded in a black church reading of Christianity, that Old Testament bifurcation, a dialectic, so to speak. We are in a land of exiles, yet our national pastime, so to speak, is exiling. We exile those who are compelled to comment on our condition. We exile those who, in fact, give witness to it. As Americans, if you witness this day, this year of the Lord, then you understand that we are clearly about the business of exiling. Those voices that we choose not to hear, we silence. Those faces and bodies that disturb us, we put at a distance. And in putting them at a distance, in silencing them, we miss their prophetic message. And we can clearly see the danger that is inherent for any prophet or prophetic peoples. This is Luke 4:28-30. No, that wasn't in the lesson, but we should look at it anyway. Christ has read from Isaiah. Christ has said to this congregation, "You're looking at me and you're saying to me, 'Physician, heal thyself.' And I'm saying to you, as a prophet, I am an exile among you." And a few verses later, what does the congregation do to the prophet? They remove him from the church. They take him to the precipice, and they are about to throw him over. Being a prophet is difficult and dangerous business. Being a prophetic people is equally difficult and dangerous. What had Christ done? Well, to those who are unthinking and uncritical, he had prophesied. And in being a prophet, to those who are unthinking and uncritical, he had foretold the future. Stop there. Think about it for a moment. Simply reflect on it. Reflect on what Christ had said, reading Isaiah, and then reflect on what Isaiah had said before Christ. It was not the future that they had foretold. It was much, much more dangerous than that. He had provided a commentary on the present. By referencing the past, by digging into his own historical corpus, he had in fact critiqued the current condition. What did he read? What was the substance of his lesson? Well, Luke 4:18-19 is an abridgment. But let's put it this way. Go back to the black church. Think about it. He was reading in quotation marks, Isaiah. Now, do you understand the notion of being read in the black vernacular? My sisters are sitting there. I have been read by my sisters so many times that it hurts. Someone will say to you, "She read you, brother." And that means you've been exposed. It means that your faults and weaknesses are bared to the world. Jesus read Isaiah to the congregation, and they were exposed. It was not so much a commentary or an analysis on your future condition. It is a critique of your present. You need to turn your attention to Isaiah. Luke has abridged this message, but Luke abridges it on purpose. He has shortened it because of time and space. He shortened it, though, because he understands that the audience to whom Christ is speaking is totally familiar with the text. Why else would they ask the physician to heal himself? Why else would they take him to the mount and wish to cast him down? They knew, not simply implicitly, but explicitly, the nature of his text. For those of us who are not sitting in that synagogue, not part of that congregation, though, given the separation of millennia, maybe we should give this another look. Isaiah writes, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, for the Lord has appointed me, anointed me, to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to comfort the brokenhearted and to proclaim that the captives will be released and the prisoners will be freed. He has sent me to tell those who mourn that the time of the Lord's favor has come, and with it, the day of God's anger against their enemies." We like to read this And we like to wax metaphorically about this. Isaiah was speaking to a real condition. Jesus was speaking to a real condition. Prophets speak to real and present dangers. Depending on the version, the translation of Isaiah that you might read, Isaiah would speak directly to a number of things. He would speak directly to widows, to orphans. He would speak to debtors. Can this church get an amen here? Debtors. In Isaiah's context, the Lord hated a number of things. He hated robbers. He hated wrongdoing. He loved justice. Put that in the past tense. Think about what your Lord hates and loves, and ask yourself if you can bring it to the present tense. Now consider these propositions, the propositions that Isaiah gives us and that then Jesus repeats. Consider them in the context of being a prophet. Consider them in the context of prophesying, the act of doing it. Consider it in the context of being prophetic people. Then understand it's difficult. It is dangerous. Prophets have been known to resign their prophecies. Noah did it. Jesus, we read, had second thoughts. Any of you who, in fact, have thought of yourselves as prophetic, have been seen in the company of prophetic people, know that there are times when people get weary. Understanding that, though, we need to understand that these are not speeches and thoughts about prognostications of the future. They are issues about our very present. If we use the Old Testament and the New Testament as historical sources, we understand that Isaiah was not a popular fellow. He was not. He was one of these exiles. If you read into the New Testament, well, clearly Jesus was not popular. But he didn't come to be popular. In fact, he did not come to comfort. I'm sorry. He came to rouse things. Christ in Nazareth is almost thrown from the precipice. Why? Because he and Isaiah demanded that people examine the current situation. Let me bring you back to the context and to the substance of my message. I'm an historian, primarily an historian of black folk globally. I grew up in a black church here in this space. And I readily admit close friends who are clergy. Many of us who grew up in that situation believed ourselves imbued with a kind of notion that since its inception, Christianity had seen us, as prophetic people. That's a tough role to hold, though. Oh, we have been weak in the knees, we have backslid, we have turned corners, we have hid, we have done all kinds of things. But some of us have prevailed. But in prevailing, you and we need to get this straight. We need to get it straight. Our task as prophets, the act of prophesying, the willingness to commit oneself to being among prophetic people is not necessarily to foresee a future. It is to provide a meaningful and visionary critique of the present so that there might be a future. We, however you define prophetic peoples, those who engage in prophecy, are the proverbial canaries in the coal mine. Is this a coal mine now in the 21st century? Is there a spark that might ignite it all? We need to be sure that we can, in fact, read the signs. So, think Isaiah. Think the most afflicted in every category. And there is your prophetic people. Those on the streets of Cleveland, Ohio, or Philadelphia. Those cold and huddled masses. Those that we would pass by. Sometimes we'd drop a few coins in their palms. Think of them. And then think of justice. Think of the justice that goes to for the least of these. And there is your future. Look at the newspapers. Look at the space around you. The 99%, those who occupy, those who start springs in faraway lands, whether they are Arabic speakers or on the streets of London or somewhere in the boroughs of some European city, the winters in Russia and China, those are prophetic voices. Those are voices that are talking about the change that needs to come now in order to see a future world. They seek justice, and for this, some of them are personified. We can see it in their faces. We can see it sometimes in the color of their skins. If we are astute, we can witness it in the history of their hardships. These may be the meek, but again, this notion of the meek suffers from interpretation, our own interpretation. For if the meek are to inherit the earth, then as both Isaiah and Christ spoke to it, they will seek it. The prophets do not come to comfort us. They come in many ways to make us uncomfortable. The spiritual that you might want to refer to is one that talks about troubling the waters. This is what prophets do. This is what prophetic people do. The prophecy is, in fact, the ways in which the waters move when the Spirit wades in them. So, if this lesson is to be heard, if the lesson is to be understood, then what we need to understand is that the prophetic people are truly those who are the least among us. The least among us. They bear the message. They are the critique of our current and common condition. They, in fact, bear the future. And so the part of the lesson, again, that was not heard is Isaiah 61:4. He tells us what happens when, in fact, you hear the prophecy, when you recognize the prophet, when you, in fact, commit yourselves to being prophetic people. 61:4, he tells us that these prophets, through their prophecies, as prophetic people, will rebuild the ancient ruins, repair cities destroyed long ago. They will revive them, and of course, us, though they have been deserted for many generations. If we accept these prophets, their prophecies, if we choose to walk among prophetic peoples, then we have to understand and believe that they understand and believe in justice. The question is, how about you? And so, as they would have said in Antioch, there endeth the lesson.